Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the New Town Theatre. Please welcome a man who is currently on the run from the police. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Hello, Edinburgh! Ah, it's good to be back. So welcome to Richard Herring's Lots of Sleep Today podcast. I went to bed at about 9 o'clock and slept through till... But my son didn't wake up till 6.15. It's the most I've ever slept in the last 5 years. I feel incredible. But I was talking to Stuart Little the other day, not that one. He's a guy who's found the largest ever frazzle in the world in his allegedly... I don't know if you saw the... It's a very topical show, this. This isn't today's Metro. He's found a frazzle that's that long, that you've got people at home really long. Some people think it's a fake because it's bigger than a packet of frazzles. He then said, oh, the packet was open. So that's quite... But I like, anyway, he calls it realist, but anyway, in any case, so, yeah, I'm in potential trouble with the police during yesterday's show. For the last few days, there's been stories in the papers, this is the only reason I've been talking about it, about women putting things in their vaginas they shouldn't put in their vaginas. I see this very much as a public service announcement. Don't put light isolates or chocolate or vinegar, anything in your vagina, okay? So I think I called yesterday's show Richard Herring's Let's Stuff Twats podcast. And I think they maybe took that seriously, what the podcast was going to be. A family with two teenage daughters got up and walked out of the venue right within the first minute of the show. I didn't see any of this. Went to the front and said, that's the most disgusting show I've ever seen. I'm going to the police about this. Which, I mean, if you're going to go to the police about Edinburgh shows, they're going to be very busy, aren't they? With it. I don't know if they thought I was just going to do... Everyone in the audience had a vagina. I was going to... I'm not like that. I wouldn't do that. I'm a happily married man. Anyway, he walked out and there were two policemen right outside and he walked straight past them. So I reckon I'm going to be safe. Though I think it might be because they were constables and that starts...
That starts with... It's weird when it starts with that. Right. It's A-level results day yesterday, which means today is Andrew Collins perving over young girls jumping on the in the air on the front of all the newspapers. I always think of Andrew Collins on today, the day that all the papers have pictures of young girls going, hooray, I've got my A-levels. And Andrew Collins always has said he didn't like it, but he always talked about it a lot, so I think he likes it. Thank you to Carpet Martin for the Stuart Little story, by the way. Let's see, is there anything else? That's pretty much it. I haven't had a drink for 228 days. I thought Edinburgh might get me, but no, there's no chance to go out due to having stupid children. I don't know why I did it. Anyway, my first guest... They're lovely. My first guest when they sleep. My first guest... If they were asleep all the time, that would be good. Is there a way of doing that? That's murder, isn't it? I'm thinking about it. My first guest today has only done good stuff, I have to say, so this is a hard thing for me to give her a best known for. She is best known for the Fanny song. That's topical. Don't walk out. It's... Just do pelvic floor exercises if you want to. If you want to get, that's all you have to do. Don't put things up there. It's fine as it is. Talking to the audience, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Bryony Kimmings, ladies and gentlemen.
Come in, sit down. Here's the microphone. There's some water. We're off. How are you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Tired.
You're tired?
Yeah, but we're all tired.
We're all a bit tired. Well, I'm not tired. Full of beans. I had 4 hours sleep the night before, so I'm going to crash in a second. I'm going to see Wallace and Gromit's Orchestral Adventure next.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
I saw that, but I can't.
You can't
be bothered.
No, you can't be bothered. I saw you, very unusually, when I came to Edinburgh this year, I thought, I'm not doing a show. I'll go to all my guest shows, I'll see them, and then I'll be able to talk to them about their shows. Mm-hmm. Haven't been to anything except for your show, which I saw yesterday afternoon.
That's
evening,
good.
Which I'm glad I did because I'm still processing it. It takes a long time to process that show. It's incredible, as you know. It's very hard to describe what it is. I think it's the closest I've ever seen in a theatre to seeing inside somebody's brain, being inside someone's brain.
That's good because that was one of the aims. Yeah,
but it's a very personal show. You're very funny. But the show is mainly quite
cryy.
Serious. Yeah, quite cryy.
Bit cryy.
Yeah, I mean, it's performance art. How do you describe it so that I won't mess it up?
Well, I call my work performance art because if I said I was stand up, everyone would say you're not because you sing songs and you use video and you're sort of also being quite serious sometimes. So I don't say comedy, although there is comedy in it.
Yeah.
So I say it's sort of singing, telling stories, dancing, crying.
Yeah, but it is, you know, the opening is very funny. The opening joke is one of the funniest opening jokes. Well, you know, when I say a joke, the opening bit is a very funny bit.
Oh,
and so you know, and you're getting laughs right. So it's about some difficult years you've had over the last few years, and a relationship breakup, having a child who got very ill, and postnatal depression.
Yeah,
really.
All those brilliantly topical sort of fun things to talk about.
But you're covering it. So, I mean, it's sort of lighthearted, and there's lighthearted ways of looking at it, and then it gets a little bleak and a little... But it's a positive show as well.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
it's like the worst year of my life. Like, we all have one of those years, right? Some of us might not have had it yet. I might get another one. But it was one of those ones where it was just like, oh, everything that could possibly happen went wrong. And then I tried to make something about it because I make stuff about my own life that kind of went there and said, you know, this is how deep and dark it can get.
Yeah.
You know, and then then it blows over. And then, you know, and then it will happen again. Yeah. Because that's life, isn't it? You sort of swan around thinking that nothing's going to happen and then something major happens. And you're like, oh, I see.
Yeah, it's quite an extreme example, I think, of what can happen after you have kids and the way things go wrong. But I think it resonates. A lot of it really. I also, after our second kid, we moved house just as we had our second kid to an old house where everything was going wrong in the house, and the house wasn't ready, and we were nearly poisoned with carbon monoxide.
Oh, God.
And it felt like the house. Yeah, it felt like the house was trying to get us, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yours is about moving to a house where there's floods and it's a lovely old house. But again, it's that thing of isolating yourself at a point when you need to be unisolated. I think a lot of people do that. But what I like about it is that kind of honesty of, you know, no one really talks about the reality of what it's like being a parent really seriously.
No, I mean, someone might whisper to you sort of, when, especially as a woman when you're pregnant, everyone's so lovely. They're like, oh, it's going to be so lovely. They want to touch you. They want to give you nappy cakes. They want to, you know, buy you books that are covered in flowers and you could put your kids' teeth in this bit. And you're like, no one goes, this is going to be the worst year of your life. Like, just hold on to your trousers and, like, your relationship's going to completely fuck up. Don't, like, just hold on. No one says that.
No,
no one passed me a little how-to under the table and went, brace, you know. It was like, this is going to be lovely. And then I'm there with my kid, like, I want to kill myself. And then you're like, is this normal? And it's like, yeah, it's completely normal. Happens to, like, one in three of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I try my best. Although I struggle as well to get pregnant friends and be like, yeah, it's going to be lovely. Don't come and see my show for, like, a year. And then come, you know, like...
Yeah. Well, I was sort of trying to work out whether my wife should go and see it yet, because my wife did struggle a little bit as well after the second child. And it's, you know, because it's all about that madness and, you know, but that thing, exactly what you say about the relationship, the way you've got to be a very strong relationship, and even if you are a very strong relationship, it could still destroy you. And no one's... Because suddenly there's a different focus, yeah. But also you're very tired and just arguing with each other about
who was it the other day that said to me, oh, it's a lady that she was making this another podcast, not as good as this podcast,
of course.
Obviously. And she was saying, you know, how on earth did I think I'd be able to have children with someone just because we knew how to have nice dinners and go dancing?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, actually what you need is someone to, like, you actually, it's so weird because it's like, it's such a change in register, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, I did a show called Boys Love and Here, which was that same sort of point. You know, you get together with someone because you fancy them and like going to the cinema with them. And then
maybe she stole that off you.
Let's stop doing that. Let's go to business with each other and raise a child.
Let's touch poo. Let's touch poo. Let's be sick, Don.
Yeah. It's very difficult. I mean, I do it a lot as well, I suppose, in using your real life in comedy. And this is, I mean, but this is... I mean, more so than most stand-ups would do, I think, in terms of... It's a very personal and very raw still subject for you. It's obviously helped you through the process.
Yeah.
But does it bulk at all to get that personal stuff out there? Or
Does it
bulk? I don't know if that's the right word. Does it...
I don't know what that means.
No, I'm not sure.
Bulk. There used to be a pub near us called the Bulk. Bulk and Chalk, yeah. That's what was...
Did you ever think, I don't want to reveal this much about myself? You know, is it... And especially, it's still close. It's only two years ago.
Weirdly, I mean, I've always made shows about my life, and there's always been an element of sort of sorrow or, you know, difficulty there. There have not been easy subjects to talk about, but nothing like this.
Yeah.
And I remember being, you know, sort of apologising because we had to cancel our tour when Frank got he had a neurological syndrome, he got very, very ill very, very quickly. So to cancel a tour, and I remember sort of writing, oh, sorry that we can't do that. And then someone sort of joking, like, oh, don't worry about it, because you'll be making a show about it in a couple of years. And maybe just being like, oh, if that person was standing opposite me, I would have punched them, you know, or headbutted them or whatever, drop kicked them. And I remember thinking, no way will I ever, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And then a couple of years later, when I felt like I was out of the woods from it, I started to speak to women about their postnatal depression. I thought, I kind of have to make a show about it, even if I feel like it will hurt me a bit and it will be tricky and triggering, that we don't talk about it. And if my job is to talk about things that we don't talk about, then it would be really irresponsible for the next choice to be like, I'm going to make a show about sunshine and daisies. And, you know, I thought, I have a duty. If that's what I do, I'll do that.
Yeah. And when as a stand-up, whenever anything bad has happened to me, there is the voice in the back of my head going, as long as everybody survives this, this is great.
Yeah.
And even if we lose one of them. I don't want to lose the young one. I'd be upset about the girl, but it's...
No, stop.
He's lovely. but the show I did about having a kid was that it was the fears, you know, that which, you know, you had to live through, the actual dread of things that could go wrong is sort of all encompassing as anything bad happening. Anyway, you live through terrible stuff that could happen, even then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So then when it does happen, I mean, it's Yeah, it's. I mean, it's technically it's an amazing achievement as well, which I
the show.
Yeah, I mean the staging of it is incredible. I mean, there must be an amazing team behind.
Oh, such a brilliant team. Yeah. It's lots of video, isn't there? Lots of set pieces. There's a lot of technology in it, which I wanted. I wanted to have him. This is, I think, my sixth show. I'd made a musical at the National. People had kind of liked it, so it was like, okay, maybe now I can get some money to make something from about this. And then I sort of thought to myself, well, it needs to be quite epic. You know, it needs to be very high-tech, kind of an epic of a very unheard story. Because it can't just be sort of spit and sawdust, you know, like, oh, then I went mental and then, you know, tried to drown myself. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
But it needed to be sort of so polished and beautiful and elevate that story to sort of epic levels. And so I really love all that sort of beautiful filmic kind of quality to the look of it. Yeah.
But if anything goes... I mean, I just, again, as a performer, I think, God, if anything goes wrong in this show, you're fucked, aren't you? Does stuff go wrong?
Sometimes. I think there's a lot of live feed going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little handheld camera goes a bit mad,
right,
and I just shout at the technician to come down and fix it and then take the piss out of him as he's coming down.
Yeah.
No, not badly. Once I did fall off the stage, but that was, there's a sort of middle section where I do inside the video.
Yeah.
Just sort of came flying off the front.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've done awful things in my career, so I don't really mind.
But you're looking at that bit. I mean, there's bits where you thought this, it's like magic on stage. That bit where you are suddenly in the video.
Inside.
It takes you a good few minutes to kind of work out how it's happening and even then you're not sure. So you think, has she just gone off? Is this a film? You go, oh, no, she's.
That's like my
nerdiest
thing. Like, when I'm watching theatre, I do love theatre and I do watch it for the story, but often I'm like, how did they do that? I'm so nerdy about that kind of tech thing. So I love that people laughed. It was like, how did you fall through that hole? I'm like, I didn't. I'm just standing still.
Yeah.
The video's moving. They're like, what?
It's awesome. People, I mean, again, I think people just have to go and see it. And it's selling very well. Not surprisingly, it's been going for a long
time. Got a couple of extra shows, though, I think. Yeah, next week.
It's sort of weird. I did a play in that venue. It's sort of, that's the... And I went to see something the other day, which was Captain Flynn and the Pirate Dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, Frank went to see that.
Yeah. And it's sort of so weird when you just think all the different things that are capable of happening in that same space. I can't believe that Captain Flynn and the Pirate Dinosaurs happened in the same room as what I saw you do.
I know, and then you sort of wait 10 minutes and John Robbins comes on with a microphone, and you think, it must be quite nice to sit in a venue and watch every show.
Yeah.
I like the fact that at the end of the show, as soon as I've literally been like, bye, it's about 10 people get on the stage, they start taking everything down, and there's people sort of still in the audience, like, you know, like still weeping for the loss of their whatever, you know, the innocence of their life, and then there's people like, get out! You're like, at least when we did it in London, it was all, like, the end was like, take as long as you want to sit here, you know, there's tissues under your chair, and these guys are like, get the fuck out, I don't care about your life.
Yeah, there's people bouldering towards you, you're trying to get out, and out of the way, out of the way. It's brilliant, it's the best part of the show. keep that in.
Yeah, bully
people. I'm
out.
Very much a performance artist myself as well. I do a podcast in which I play an audio podcast in which I play myself at snooker to find out which is the best me. It's been running for about 7 or 8 years.
That's quite performance art.
I do a podcast where I'm trying to clear all the stones at the field where I do my dog walk.
That is very performance.
There's a lot of stones, so I'm trying to get them all, and then I have to describe what I'm doing and explain to people how I'm doing it as I go around. Which that one's going to run for hopefully 30 or 40 years. Ultimately, I'm hoping to replace all my body parts with stones, so I can carry on doing it for eternity.
You're more performance art than I am.
Yeah. So, you know, if you could get me any of your grants from the Arts Council
are easy to get.
Are they?
Yeah. Just write, please, can I have some money? I want to replace all my organs with stones. They'll be like, genius. And they'll give you like 50 grand.
Yeah. I must try it.
That's how it works.
But it's, you know, I like that element of, you know, I think there's in the best stand-up there's art, and in the best art there's comedy, you know. It's, a lot of the people feel it's...
I love like Kim Noble, for example, who'll do, you know, Noble and Silver did, it's very strange, but mainstream television programmes, and then his shows are so absolutely deranged, and then he'll make very small books or huge gallery pieces, and I think as much as possible as an artist, you want to be able to sort of occupy all the territory. One, so you can be satisfied, you know, mentally, but also for the money. Yeah. Like, what are you? I'm like, well, are you a comedian or are you an artist? What are you? I'm a funder. I'm an artist. What are you? I'm a punter. I'm a comedian, mate. You know, whatever, you get the money.
Yeah, fair enough. It's what it's all about. I mean, you've done a lot. This is the first of your shows I've seen, sadly, because the other ones sound right up the street as well. My wife has seen the one about you becoming a pop star.
Thing. Incredible,
your 9-year-old niece was in the show as
she
well.
She was, yeah.
Yeah, so you were trying to do a
Sometimes I do social experiments. Yeah. Like when nothing bad's happened in my life that year, I've been like, right, I have to make something happen. Not necessarily bad. But for that one, I'd moved back to near my mum's house, and so I was seeing my niece, who was 9, quite a lot more than I ever had. I'd been, you know, basically drunk in a club for the whole of my 20s. I didn't even know who this person was. And she was sort of showing me all these pop videos on YouTube, and I was astounded by this sort of lingerie kind of Rihanna grinding. And I said, go into my costume store, babe, and go and get out the clothes that a pop star would wear. And she literally came out with, like, I mean, like, worse than what Madonna wore, you know, like, just, like, crotchless, like, thigh-high boots. And I was like, do you know what feminism is? And she was like, no. And I was like, ugh. I punched my sister. And then I said, let's invent a feminist pop star. And she managed me for a year. And the pop star was called Catherine Bennett. Right. Very pop starry name. She was a paleontologist by day, pop star by night. She loved tuna pasta. And I had to get her on, played on Radio 1, and I did.
All right.
And then we made a show about what happens when you try and make a kid political and the manager of a pop star.
Yes. It's great. Well, your songs are awesome. So obviously, there's music in this show.
Yeah, I love
the
that.
The Fanny song I mentioned, which is
a classic.
It's a classic. It's great fun. So you've got all these different skills. There's movement, there's comedy, there's, you know, it's all these different skills intertwined. I like the sound of Sex Idiots, which was when I nearly wrote a film about this myself, where you get an STD, you got an STD, and then went to search through your sex life to.
Yeah,
find out
they did make a Channel 4 comedy program, didn't they? Called Scrotal Recall.
Yeah, mine was called I Don't Know Who I Did Last Summer.
That's very good. My favourite part of Sex Idiot, which is the one I've done the most because it is the most stand-up-y show of mine, is the audience donate their pubes and I wear it as a moustache.
Oh my gosh.
And I sing a song. And I was trying to think of someone said to me, how many people's pubes must that have been? And I thought, 10 years of doing that show, 100,000?
Yeah.
And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah. I remember the last time I did that show, I was just found out that day that I was pregnant. And it was a very hot day in Adelaide, like a 45-degree day. And I was like, put these pubes on my face and thought, you know, I was really morning sick and I was like, I'm never doing that show again.
Yeah.
Like, went off stage, puked, came back on, like, cheers.
I think that might be how you got the STD, by doing that. That doesn't sound.
No. I'm sure I always get cold sores, so that might be that.
Yeah, that could
gross.
Be
that. That is gross. Why did I do that? You know, like when you think of your career and you think, what an attention seeker.
But is that, well, you know, I did something similarish in which I had a toothbrush moustache for a year to see why the moustache was associated with Hitler.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I went around with that. So I understand all that element of it where...
You're very process-based artist.
Yeah, well, sometimes, yeah, some of the shows.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Some of them I like, but I like to vary it with what I do. So sometimes I do more straight stand-up, but quite a lot of my shows have been about a subject or... Yeah.
I do remember the one with the moustache. I do remember that happening.
And yeah.
And me thinking, why is he dressed like Hitler?
And it was to, you know, get the Nazis back again. It's worked.
It did work.
Yeah.
God.
And what's the show where you were drunk? You mentioned this in the show last night.
I did.
You drank for a week? Drunk for a week?
Oh, it's more scientific than that.
Is it? Yeah.
Baseline day on the Monday, no alcohol, made art, test audience came in, assessed the art. This was the collaboration with biomedical scientists and some neuroscientists and various other people at Wellcome Trust. Second day, third day, fourth day, incrementally more drunk, kept in the same alcoholic state by being breathalyzed for 8 hours. It wasn't just getting pissed, mate. But was the best artist on day 7 when I was 11 shots for breakfast and kept in that state for the whole day.
Right.
But I think maybe the best art meant the funniest, weirdest things, you know.
Yeah, it's, again, I've done gigs drunk, like accidentally and on purpose. sometimes it's not a good idea. There was a gig that they did the Frog and Bucket at, where they make you get drunk and then give you shots all the way through the show.
What?
But it was quite good. You lose the inhibitions to the extent that you're I was incredibly rude to people in the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also did. I can't remember what it was, but I came up with something about Judas that was pretty good.
But you can't remember
but
what
can't
it
really
was.
I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking that is pretty good. Right, I'm going to ask you, see how you get on with some emergency questions. This is just dumb-ass questions I ask people. I'll ask you this as an artist. If you could take one painting or exhibit from any museum or art gallery in the world and own it, and it'd be yours and you can take it home, they say you're allowed one thing, what thing would you take? Or person could be a performance artist, you could take them and make them do their art in your house for the rest of
I would, life. I would, if I was allowed to choose a performance artist, I'd choose Oleg Kulik, who's the human mirable.
Okay.
He's always just in galleries, just turning.
In the ceiling?
Just like in the top corner of galleries, right. And you shine lights at him and he rotates. Wow. He's naked and he's even got disco ball pieces on his penis, which I just love. And I'm sure my son would love that as well.
Yeah, that'd be, it'd just be distracting. Probably wouldn't sleep again. Don't put it in his bedroom. might lead to problems. Good. Well, you can have that.
Thank you.
I'll get that delivered person. To you. Have you ever seen a ghost, Brian Cummings?
Never.
No, I'm really glad everyone you.
No way, it's not something I believe in, sorry. Nah. Sorry.
I really thought you would.
No, really? What? Yeah. Why? What about me looks like...
It's just my theory of mental...
mental people.
People who have a different mental look at the world. You know, but your show saw almost... The house is almost a ghost...
Yeah, but I've never. I don't believe in the afterlife, so no, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I believe in energy and like weird like auras and that. Yeah. If you'd ask me that,
okay, I'm not going to ask you that.
No, definitely don't. I can see yours right now.
How is it?
It's literally just a light behind you. It's orange.
Good. That's good. Orange is good. I was just going to ask you something. Then it's got out of my head again. Oh, it was so important. I asked you this. Ah, the leaking critical voice that you use in your show.
God, yeah. Why, do you have one of those?
I guess all performers have that. It's interesting to have it. So you have a male voice who criticises you and says, you know, whatever.
And I play that guy.
Yeah.
So I pop out every now and then and kind of criticise myself in the show. Do you know why? What are you asking me? Why did I do it?
Yeah, well, I wondered, you know, you've gotten this stage where you're so successful, and is it really still there to that extent?
Yeah, of course. Everyone has a critical inner voice. Yeah. I mean, I think he was there the whole time I was trying to write this show, so I was like, if he's going to be there the whole time, he might as well just come on the stage with me. And actually, by putting him on the stage with me, he kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
Because he allowed me to just be like, I can see this for what it is. But no, constantly.
Yeah.
I'm writing a film at the moment. I've got one coming out in December, Christmas film,
yeah.
Which should be like, right, now, Bryony, you are a screenplay writer. But of course not. I'm sitting down to write another film and I'm like, who the hell do I think I am? You know, so it's going to be, it's constant. It's just knowing that it's there and being able to say, shut up, mate. You're a dickhead.
Yeah. I mean, the creative process, you know, you go through that. It's always horrible until it's finished and then it's nice for a little bit and then
and
you have to start
again.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you've always got that. What? So the film you've written with Emma Thompson, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's Paul Feig, is it?
My favourite director.
Yeah.
Managed to...
So this is called Last Christmas. Is there? Can you give us any information about it? Or is it
you can watch the trailer on YouTube. Okay. It's got Emilia Clarke in it of Game of Thrones fame, who's lovely, and Henry Golding, who was in Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay. Did she come and see your show, Emilia Clarke?
She didn't actually.
She was here this
week.
She
was here.
And I looked at the list, and you weren't on
there. I know.
What a bitch.
I know.
I knew it when she killed all those people with that dragon.
I know.
She was going to turn out.
It was a psycho.
I liked it till then, and then she turned out not.
No, and I can't tell you much about it, apart from it's a Christmas rom-com.
Yeah.
It's very festive. It's gorgeously shot, and Paul's calling it a love letter to London. Sure. It's just gorgeous.
And how's the working process with Emma Thompson? Were you sitting down writing with her, or were you passing?
I went to her gaff. did some brainstorming. Greg's part of the writing of it as well. Her husband wrote a draft. We meet each other every now and then. Sometimes I go to her parties. She's ever so nice, which is, you know, like when you're like, please be nice, please be nice. And she's bloody lovely.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, we'll look forward to that. It's out at Christmas.
Yes. November 8th.
Good marketing. That's what I would do.
But it's not on last Christmas. It's on this Christmas. George Michael's, based on the lyrics of George Michael's song, that kind of thing.
Do you refer to the fact that George Michael died at Christmas in the film?
I can't remember. I don't remember.
That's what I'm saying, just leave him alone. So, look, tell us about... I'd love to talk to you. Hopefully we'll get to talk to you again another time. There's so much...
I'd rather not, thanks.
No, you don't want to do it. Okay, fair enough. As my critical voice has come in.
You're rubbish. Yeah. Don't make me come back.
I mean, I don't really need that. That's how I do the podcast. Yeah. I'm sure get some good people on for you, thank God. So tell us where you're on and where your extra shows are. There's still some tickets left, aren't there?
There is. It's getting good and busy, but it's on Pleasance 1, which is in the courtyard on Pleasance. It's 5:30 p.m. every day until the end now, because I've had my day off. And on the Friday and Saturday next week, it's on at 10:15 a.m. Right. If you want to start your day with a massive cry.
Yeah. Is that going to be difficult for you? I mean, you are very...
I have done two a day before.
Have you?
Yeah.
But at that time of the morning, you're very emotionally involved in it. I mean, you're genuinely crying at the end and you're genuinely...
My agents are making me do it.
Yeah. They're terrible.
They're awful people. Help me. No, it's fine. Yeah. It's emotional, but do you know what? Everyone's like, are you okay? And I'm like, no. The reason why I'm crying is because it's sad.
Yeah.
It's okay for something to be sad. Yeah. It's not that I'm in the middle of a trauma. It's just sad. Sad story.
Yeah.
And also, I'm a really good actress.
You are very good. It's 80 minutes though as well. You know, that's a long time.
There's a lot of weightlifting in it as well.
There's some weightlifting. I should put some of that in this because I need to get a bit fitter.
Oh,
I think that's a good way.
I love weightlifting.
Yeah.
It's my thing.
Is it?
Look at me, I'm huge. But I just love the way it makes me feel. I don't know. I hate running, or any kind of cardio. I'm such a massive smoker. Anything that disrupts my smoking. But you can smoke whilst weight training.
Well, we're going to have to draw it to close as we have another guest. But ladies and gentlemen, massive round of applause for Brady
Cummings. Thank you for having me on.
I will do my usual reminder that after the show I will be in the foyer. I'm very happy to say hello and do selfies if that is your thing. No one can do a selfie, so don't say to me I can't do selfies. No one can, okay? And so don't worry. Don't feel bad about your inability to do selfies. No human being can do them. I don't know why it's become a thing. I'm selling my books, Emergency Questions, 1001 Emergency Questions. That's the new one. If you prefer something that fits in your handbag, that's the original Emergency Questions book. Costs the same. There's half as many questions in it. But they're better. They're three times as good, so do the mathematics. There's also some stickers you can get as well, saying I'm one of the cool kids. Lots of different stickers. You get those free if you buy both books. And if you got a programme at the beginning, which I'm sure you did, that is a free gift from me to you. I hope you will enjoy it. I'll make a collection for Scope after the show. People will either have buckets or there'll be a bucket on my table. If you can't find anyone, just give me the money and I'll put it in a pile on my table and it will go in the bucket. Please give generously. We had Lost Voice Guy on yesterday and who has cerebral palsy, and we got loads of money yesterday. I might just get him back every day just sit and look forlorn in the entrance as you leave to guilt you into giving. So please give some.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Please give us some money back if you can. Right, my next guest today is probably best known, it's hard to say, for being a backing singer for Bazooka Joe, which is actually quite cool. Or you might know her as the girl on Undercliff from The French Lieutenant's Woman. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Arabella Weir! Welcome. Pick up the microphone.
Did you like that hilarious description of my oeuvre? Girl on the Undercliff, and what was the other one? Backing singer of Bazooka Joe. Excellent. Bazooka, all true.
Bazooka Joe, Adam Ant was in Bazooka Joe.
That's the most famous thing about it. Yeah. No, the really most famous thing about it is our bass player in those days was called Stuart Goddard. And for the real Trekkies, you'll know that that is the real name of Adam Ant. And then at one of our last ever gigs was supporting a band at an art school, predictably enough, who were playing their first ever gig. And they were so bad that they were booed off, and this is not a joke, within about sort of 35 seconds. And they were called the Sex Pistols. That is true.
Wow. Imagine if you'd gone on to be a backing singer for them.
No. I'd probably be dead.
And French Lieutenant's Woman, do you remember working on that?
Yes,
that's your first credit.
It was in the days when nobody worried about budgets. It was also long before the Me Too days, although there was plenty of that stuff going on. And I had a tiny part, as you might think from the name of my character, Girl on the Undercliff. And the purpose of my character was that I was a saucy local girl with my boobs hanging out, not quite literally, but one of those sort of 18th, 19th century costumes. And the idea was that me and my boyfriend were sort of cavorting in the woods, and the very uptight character played by Meryl Streep would be looking at me and my boyfriend frolicking in an unfettered way, and that she and Jeremy Irons would see us and think, oh, that's how sex should be. And so I'm in the film for about, 11 seconds or something. And that was an 8-week shoot for me.
Wow.
Because I was on weather cover. But it was fantastic. Yes, I was very, a long time ago though. But not many. I bet there are lots of French Lieutenant's Woman fans in here. Yeah, that's what you've all come for, yeah?
It is, yeah.
Oh, look, it was the girl from the Undercliff. Let's rush down there.
The girl from the Undercliff. If you're the girl from the cliff, that would have been better,
obviously,
wouldn't it?
But
the
obviously.
Girl from the Undercliff.
Girl from the Undercliff.
You know, you've got to start somewhere. So, you're up in Edinburgh. And have you done Edinburgh before? You must have done Edinburgh before. You've not. You've done The Fringe before?
Someone just went, no. Is my Wikipedia entry person here. Yeah. I did the festival for the first time ever as a drama student in 1976, and wow. I've never been back since. So this is my first ever live show. I mean, not my first ever live show, my first ever solo show. And yeah, it feels pretty epic.
Yeah. Why did you decide to bring it to the Fringe?
Well, I know Edinburgh very well. My dad's from Dunfermline, was from Dunfermline, and my mum was from Melrose. And so I know Edinburgh very, very well indeed. So the whole festival thing wasn't, like anybody from around here. It wasn't a kind of, that's a thing. I knew Edinburgh anyway. And then I'd been to the festival loads of times. And then last year I saw a couple of my mates, females, doing shows. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. One was, I'm not going to say who it was, but one was terrible. And I thought, I can definitely do better than that. But for me, it's always been like a Mount Everest.
Yeah.
It's always been like, if I can do that, I can do anything. That'd be less Mount Everest and more New York, wouldn't it? If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. That's the reference. And not Mount Everest, because obviously if you can make it there, you can also make it other places. And then I just... Also, my kids have gone to university, and I'm a single parent, and I think that deserves a round of applause, actually. No, I'm joking. I don't really think all women are single parents. Oh, yes. I don't believe that either. And so I just sort of thought, yeah, I'm going to do it. And funnily enough, I do a lot of this. All the way through the discussions with the producers and everything, I thought, yeah, we're having these conversations, but I'm not going to really do it. And then they go, right, we've booked this venue. And I was thinking, yeah, book away, because I'm not really going to be there. And then suddenly it looked like I was doing it, and here I am. But I'm having a really good time, but I am pretty frightened.
Yeah. Well, you're up and running now. You must be. The nerves must have settled. It's all
the
selling
show
well.
Is about my mum. Yeah. So most of you will probably know that I had a very famous catchphrase, which was, "Does my bum look big in this?" And that was about total silence. No.
I've got a very young audience. They're very, very young.
Yeah, everyone's under 20. Got no fast show. Never heard of that catchphrase. No. And by the way, it was my catchphrase. In case somebody goes, yeah, but I mean, other people said that. No, they didn't. And I've had two espressos this morning. I'm cooking. That catchphrase came out of the fact that I did genuinely believe my life would be perfect if I had lost weight and had a smaller bum and a Prada handbag, obviously. That turns out to be true. And then when I sort of thought about it, it was all because my mother, who was, as I say, Scottish and not a lovely homemade jam and drop scones Scottish. She was very puritanical, punishing. Don't get too big for your boots. What's that about? Don't do that. Don't look nice in that. That's not... That Paul Whitehouse, he's marvellous. You're okay. how's he letting you on his show? I had that once. So this show is called Does My Mum Loom Big In This? So it's all about... See what I've done? Yeah. See what I've done? And so it's about my relationship with my mother and then also about me as a mother. So, yeah. It's funny, but it is also... There is quite a lot of the pretty alarming parenting.
Yeah, well, it sounds, you know... Like when you were pregnant, your mother was saying you were fat, and when you two days before she died, your mother was saying
you are. And I went, but I'm 4 months pregnant still. She just couldn't. She couldn't. I mean, I don't know how many of the audience are actually Scottish, but so many of my Scottish friends identify. I don't think it's exclusively Scots, actually, but it's that thing of I'll have to undermine you. I'll have to keep. You know, don't get too big for your boots. Just sort of stay in line. Don't get noticed. I mean, I think it must have been wanting your kid to achieve, but also thinking they would achieve better if they were sort of told. It was always, you're not more special than anyone else. Oh, yeah, I found that out in a hurry, working with a lot of men. I think it's just, I don't know where it comes from, because that's not what I'm like. I mean, I literally break out a brass band when my children remember to flush the lab. You are a genius. it's about that, and it's about me as a mother. And
I mean, it's tough parenting, isn't it? Because you do tend to try and do the opposite to the things that affected you as a child, and your children, they aren't necessarily the same as you were. So your kids in 20, 30 years' time might be doing a thing about how you'd never criticise them and how that ruined their lives. But
I do criticise them. Yeah. I am not a kind of crazy, oh my God, you're so marvellous. I mean, I do think they're wonderful. I think they're good people, but I have brought them up to think about others, to be kind to others, and to be, more importantly than anything else, a member of their community.
Yeah.
So, yeah. My daughter saw a boy who was obviously, it turns out of his mind on drugs, who'd just been to some festival near our house. We live in central London, but there's a big festival in Finsbury Park, which is very edgy. And she picked him up and brought him home. I don't think for a shag. I hope not. But I did think, no, that then I've done a good job.
Yeah.
Because she considers others, but, you know, and as long as they don't... at the moment, I'm trying to get my daughter to be a police officer. It turns out that's still not hip. And I think... I think that's weird. I think... I'm older now, but... I think police officers can make a difference. It's only like being a social worker on with more members of the BNP. No, that's not true. she goes, you are joking, right? And I'm thinking, well, I think that's quite cool.
Well, talking about the Farce show, which let's talk about briefly. I actually thought, I thought the character that may, you know, I think you were the first person to do this as well, and this is a joke that you hear a lot now, is the woman in a meeting... with all the guys ignoring what she's saying.
That wasn't the name of the character, by the way. Catchy as that was.
What was the character? How was
the girl? The character was called Girl Who Boys Can't Hear. And the conceit was that I wasn't that I was a different woman in every sketch. And the idea, which literally I got verbatim from being the only girl in the Fast Show, I would say something. The boys, as they were in those days, in the Fast Show, would go, should we get a sandwich or should we go to that cafe around the corner? I go, I am literally in the middle of doing a sketch. and then somebody else would say exactly what I'd said and everyone else in the room would go, no, that's brilliant. That is the kind of thinking we need. So I applied it in the sketches and then she'd be a doctor or she'd be a businesswoman or she'd be a police officer, whatever. And the amount of letters I got for that, people saying that's me. And of course, that's 20 years on and it's still going on.
Yeah.
But Charlie Higson said at the time, you know what people are going to think this character's called? And I went, what? And he said, they're going to call it Girl Who Never Shuts Up.
The thing I don't know is how was the Fast Show team assembled? Because there were some people who'd worked together before.
Paul Whitehouse and Charlie Higson were writing for the, by this time, incredibly successful Harry Enfield. And then Paul had just started to do stuff with Harry, where he was on screen, and Charlie at the time was still mainly writing and then sometimes would be bloke in sketch. But basically that was it. Yeah. And Paul was, you know, people could see that Paul was superbly talented. But Harry was, you know, I think Harry had something like 11 million viewers in those days. I mean, you'll all remember Harry, he was huge. And it was on BBC One. And then Paul and Charlie didn't feel they were getting enough sort of to do, so they came up with the idea of the Fast Show, and then I knew them because I'd done bits and bobs with Harry and Alexi Sale and other people of our sort of generation, although they're all much older than me clearly, and then Paul and Charlie asked me to do it, and then I think they'd seen John Thompson and Simon Day. If you think there was any kind of method, it wasn't. It was literally us standing in a bar and then going, well, you're quite funny, Arabella. Do you want to do some bits in this show we might do? So there was no board where everyone worked out who would go well together. It was all very haphazard, and then it just all sort of gelled.
Yeah. It sort of changed sketch comedy. I mean, and not necessarily for the good, the things that follow. Well, I think... Because... Let me finish, Arabella. It was a fantastic show. We were starting up at the same time. We were still doing very long format sketches. But it basically stopped that. It meant that then everybody was trying to do Fast Show, is what I mean. Everyone tried to do the next Fast Show, which involved just doing the same characters every week, and they weren't as good as the Fast Show characters, if you see what I mean.
I mean, I do know what you mean, but I think once... I mean, of course, as you know very well indeed, comedy, you know, the audience... Part of the joy is you set the thing up and then the audience, the payoff, the audience know where you're going, and the joy is that it will be paid off for them and that they were right in thinking that was the direction of travel. And so I think it's so hard to then do a long sketch and then, you know, things get so boring and somebody... I mean, not that it was my idea, but I think what was brilliant about the Fast Show, particularly as done by Paul, but also Simon and John, and well, everybody, but you know, they were more, was the idea that you could encapsulate a really complicated character like Paul's one, you know, I'm afraid I was very drunk, but that you could get quite a complicated character and do them so quickly, but get everything you needed to know about that with the catchphrase in the end. But yeah, well, we didn't deliberately mean to spoil it for all the other comedians. It's a bonus, isn't it?
Well, I think that and The League of Gentlemen maybe, because The League of Gentlemen went the other way and made it everything more dramatic. So they took the sketch show into...
Less funny, you could say.
But, you know, I kind of miss those. I mean, you get them in a little bit in the American ones you can't see on Netflix where there's just different sketches where you don't get recurring characters and it's just an idea...
Yeah, you get that more on Does Anybody Watch SNL?
Yeah.
You get that, and then that's joyful.
Yeah.
And it's great, but I mean, that's not what we did, so no.
Tough. It was all right, you did okay. No Fist of Fun. That's what everyone's talking. That's what everyone's still talking about
today. We were
literally
contemporaries. I mean, not age-wise.
I remember our producer, She came in, because she was really more worried about it than we were, and we weren't bothered, we were just glad to have a TV show. But she said, the first episode of the Fast Show has been recorded, and nobody in the audience laughed at anything, it's a disaster. And she was really happy, because she thought it was going to mean that the Fast Show wasn't going to work
out. Have never heard silence like, so we... Do you all remember the characters Paul and Charlie used to do of the landowner, the posh landowner, and he was in love with Paul Whitehouse's character, who was the land worker. And so obviously they couldn't be done in the studios because they were all shot on location, you know, because we had to have a big stately home that Charlie's character nominally owned. And so we played all six to a studio audience, and you have never heard silence like that. I mean, what the hell? And I remember thinking, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
No one's ever going to get this.
But that's it. If you're doing something original, all the shows I like, all the comedy shows I like, the first time I've seen them, I've gone, what the fuck is this? I don't get this. And, you know, if it's his own thing, it takes you a couple of weeks to go, oh, God, no, I get it. And then when you get it, and especially with the Fast Show, because it was so much about the building up the jokes. You've also been, you're the first female Doctor Who.
So I was.
Yeah.
Yes. So when Doctor Who wasn't on telly, it exists, and it still does, what do they call it?
Big Finish.
Yeah, Big Finish. No, but I was thinking, you go online and you buy... So it's all done by actors, but it's on CDs.
Yeah.
A bit like radio. I sound like an old granny trying to explain what it is.
I think they probably do downloads now as well, yeah. But
one
yeah.
day they decide... Yeah, downloads and all that. And they decided to make... And I think it went from Richard E. Grant to me, you know, the transformation. And they decided to make it as a joke. I think it was around the time that all Ladette stuff was in, short-lived, quite rightly. So she was burping and farting, and apparently they had an unprecedented number of complaints. so I was Doctor Who. So, yes, before Jodie.
Well, that's good. I've been in one of those Doctor Who things as well, so...
They're good, yeah. They're good fun.
They're good fun. And I loved you. I love Drifters, and you're in Drifters. You and Bob, wasn't it? Bob Mortimer.
Me and Bob Mortimer, yeah. I mean, I wasn't Bob Mortimer.
No.
Me and Bob were playing husband and wife, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I love Bob very much.
And it was a great show, Drifters.
Yeah. Jessica Knappett.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's doing a show on ITV now.
Yeah.
Some sort of blooper show with John Thompson. But, absolutely love Drifters. And then... because you're not quite old enough yet, but you think you're really hip and rock and roll and doing a lot of comedy, and then suddenly people who you think you're a contemporary with say, could you play my mum in this series? And you're thinking, how could I possibly do that? You and I are the same age. So I've been really lucky because that happened with Skins and Drifters, and I did a show for Channel 4 called Pure, where suddenly these comedy writers that for whom you've been on telly when they were little are now writing the stuff and putting you in it. So it's nice to get out.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to happen for me. This is for...
Way too young and hip.
I get cast as sex perverts. And,
I totally get that,
basically people who've cut their cocks off. That's all I get. So people who use prostitutes, that's all I get. That's all I get offered. I take it, you know, it's fine. Got to get deep into the character. David, talking to Doctor Who, David Tennant was your lodger, I found out today, for 5 years. Is that right?
How did you find that out today?
I found out everything today because I looked you up on the internet today.
Is that what it does? It say that on Wikipedia?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's Wikipedia somewhere.
Who's Scottish in the audience and over about 40? Right, so 25 and a half, I think, maybe coming up 26 years ago, there was a really brilliant TV drama called Taking Over the Asylum, which was about a radio station in a mental home set in Glasgow. And I, as a Scot, but as you can tell, a posh Scot, was cast as a radio producer who had discovered one of the voices on this. Obviously, the inpatients did their own radio show, and one of them was the 20-year-old David Tennant, and we met on that, and I just thought, this boy is really, really talented. And I was going through a horrible time at the time with my soon-to-be ex-boyfriend, of which there'd been Legion. And we hit it off, and we did the whatever the friend equivalent is of falling in love as friends, and we've been mates ever since. So he moved down from Scotland to make it big in the south, and we're very good friends.
Yeah. Was he a good lodger? Did he
He was an absolutely brilliant lodger, but we were incredibly lazy, and these are the days before mobile phones, so 25 years ago. So we both had landlines, because he didn't want me answering the calls to all his lady friends. And we'd both lie in our bedrooms, where literally I'd be in the room above him and talk all night on the telephone. Very expensive. But, yeah, he was a good lodger and a very good friend.
Good. And I was talking to a previous guest about Bonjour La Classe.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I noticed you were in Bonjour La Classe.
It's literally a show about finding all the shittiest parts
mainly,
I've ever played.
It's mainly it. Well, I don't think
Bonjour
many people,
La Classe
many people ask
Stephen
you about
Fry.
It. Yeah, Stephen Fry was in it, but it was... oh, God, sorry. I'm very sorry. She's a good friend of mine. Callard.
Beverly Callard.
No, her daughter.
She's a good friend of yours. Sorry, that's even...
Yeah, I just
don't
think...
And I've worked with her too, and she's... this is two old people trying to remember a young person's name. What a great show. No, it isn't Beverly. No, wait a minute.
I couldn't think of
a
mum's... I was on House of Games.
Lisa.
House of Games, and then the question
no
came up about her mum, and I couldn't think of Beverly
no
Callard.
One knows what she's
Come
called.
On, Rebecca Callard. That's it, Rebecca Callard.
I don't think it's Rebecca. Yeah, I didn't remember her being in it, because I just remember Stephen Fry and me, and it was, yeah, it was called about French teachers. Or it's practically Mind Your Language.
Yeah.
Isn't it? For posh people.
She didn't know about Mind Your Language, and I was picking her up on that, saying, was it like that? Did you have nice, good racial stereotypes in it? But they didn't. Anyway, we'll move on. We'll do a... probably edit that out, James, so I don't look like an idiot.
Yeah, because that's really boring. No, let's leave the bit in where he's got no idea what his friend's name is. I like
that. I don't know where George Square is. I've done a gig.
He's got young children. This is what happens to you when you've got young children. Your brain freezes.
This is my 25th Edinburgh, and like that's what I find weird about Edinburgh. You're walking around, you go, God, I was walking up Castle Street on my way here, and I thought, oh God, I stayed here like in 2002 or something. And you just completely forget, you know, you're going there every day for a month and then you can't even remember which house it was, who you were sharing with.
Yeah, that will be in the drugs.
No, I don't, I'd never, God, I wish I'd just, I'd have so many excuses for the way my career's gone if only I'd taken loads of cocaine, but I've got no excuses. I so envy Tony Slattery. I'll ask you an emergency question. Let's go old school. Would you rather have a tit that dispenses talcum powder or a finger that can travel through time?
Would I rather have a tit?
Yeah, a tit. Like your bosom or your nipple, your breast would
that
have...
That could dispense talcum powder.
Unlimited free talcum powder for life.
Or a finger that could travel
through
time.
Yeah, your
finger. Well, oh, that's a no-brainer, the finger.
Yeah, of course, that's the answer, yeah. What would you... to give you an easy one to start with, what would you use it for?
What would I use my finger... So the finger is attached to me?
Yeah, but it can go to places in the past through a little vortex.
Ooh, what would I use it
You've
for?
You've been Doctor Who. You should have thought of this as part of your preparation for the role.
The sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
Is
there anything you'd like to alter in time using your finger? Future or past?
Future. Ooh, I don't think I want to know the future.
No.
That is a good one. You've
never been asked this question before.
Yeah, loads of times. So often, that's why I've got a lovely snappy answer. I've no idea. I might go back. I'd be quite interested in history. I'd quite like to see what hit the thinking there and what sort of formed his hatred of everybody.
Yeah.
But in particular.
It was the finger coming through time, poking him to find out. That's what said. What's the only way to get away from this finger is to try and exterminate everyone with fingers.
It's just my finger going through time rather than the rest of me. It's my finger. It'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
It's going to tell me all about it. I don't know.
Anyway, it doesn't matter if you don't have an answer. It's okay. This you'll like this one more. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham or a armpit that dispenses sun cream? That's why I've nearly forgot the question. You can eat the ham.
Made of ham.
Yeah, you can eat it whenever you
or,
like.
I'll go for the sun cream.
Yeah.
Sun cream, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. That's just.
I don't really want anything under my arm. I've got enough fat there, never mind anything else. But it'd be useful to have the sun cream. Because it's so boring, and then I'd never get stopped at the airport, would I?
No.
Because you're always, you've got a packet and it's got to be 100ml and all that, but it'd always be there. No, yeah. That'd be good. No. And then that means my children have to touch me because they'd have to get it out, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
That'd be the dispenser. I go, you've got to give me a hug because the sun cream's underneath my arm. My daughter, I asked her for a hug and she said, what, you're a fucking pedo.
Uh,
Oh, they're lovely. They're lovely.
Aren't they? From the mouths of babes. She's 42. Yeah.
Now, and with the my does my bum look big in this? Which you've made a, you've written a book about it, and you've obviously, you know, embraced it. But I mean, A, it's ridiculous. You're a very petite and small woman, so you should not be worrying about that. But also, do you get, does it, how many times a day are people saying that to you? Or is it, does it haunt your life?
Not so much now, but the what I used to get when the Far Show was on all the time, and when he says you've written a book about it, what he means is the international bestseller. But what I used, my favourite one was when my kids were like, not, I mean, they knew I was on the telly and stuff, but you know, they don't care what, and they were like 8 and 9, so they're old enough to know when strangers come up to you and stuff. But a bloke at an airport went, "Oi, aren't you the bum girl?" And I thought, now in a dark alley that could be a different story, couldn't it? And I went, "Hello." And he went, "You know, the girl, the bum girl." And I was thinking, no, and my kids were going, "What does he mean, Mum?" And I said, "Well, not that." So no, I've been, you know, I got my bum to pay for itself.
You did.
And I've been very grateful for it ever since.
Yeah. Are people disappointed that your bum isn't bigger than it
no,
is?
No, no, wait, if you sleep with me, you'll see how fat my ass is. It's plenty fat.
Well, I will sleep with you just to find
now,
that out.
But simply for research purposes.
Just for research purposes. After the podcast. It's very important to do your research after the podcast. That is what I've discovered. Well, we haven't got very long left. Tell us about where your show's on and how we can get to see it and when
my
you're
show
it.
Is on at 4 p.m. and then it's on at 2 p.m. as well on Monday, but it is sold out.
And which room?
So it's at the Assembly Studio 2.
Oh, but it's all sold out.
But no, yeah, it's completely sold out.
But you're on tour.
You might be able to get returns, but it is on tour from February, and I will be touring all over Scotland as well as the UK.
Terrific.
I will be coming to Scotland, which I love, and it's my hometown.
Good. There was some on Two Doors Down, which you haven't got time to talk about.
Who's
was,
a Two Doors Down? Is it yay! Thank you.
There was some. I saw on Wikipedia there was some criticism of your Scottish accent, but you
which
are
is
Scottish.
Fucking yeah. Unacceptable.
Yes.
Because do you know who said my Scottish accent? I am specifically doing Paisley.
Yeah.
Now my dad was from Dunfermline, and my mother was from the Borders. And David Tennant, if you please, said to me, "What the fuck are they on about? It's impeccable." So I will not be told. No, it's just. And do you know the person who said that? It was a white. Don't know. Well, that's not relevant. But he was. He was an Englishman from the Guardian, and I literally I did the thing you're never supposed to do. I went up to him and I said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And he went, "All right, sorry about that."
Will you print a retraction?
Come to my house and tell me my fucking Scottish accent's not gonna fucking have your pal.
If you ever need any tips, I'll give you some tips on the Scottish accent later. But it's I've got it. Mine's amazing. I went. You wouldn't do it, no, though. Thanks so much for coming on. Good luck with the tour. Good luck with the show, ladies and gentlemen. Arabella Weir.
Thank you.
You may go. We're back tomorrow. Sonia Patel and Dilip Sochabonda. There's still 7 or 8 of these to go. We just booked in most of the last bit. John Cairns is coming on the last one. That's very exciting. Lots of great acts coming up. Please come and see this and on tour. And we will see you tomorrow if you want to come again. Thanks very much. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to Rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.